What the EFL? It's the Football League podcast ready for the beach. Coming up, Black Cats, Blunt Blades, as Sunderland return to the Premier League and Sheffield United's miserable playoff record gets extended. Nathan Jones' prayers are answered in the League One final. It's 1-0 to Wimbledon again, and we'll still be doing managerial chat. Powered by Quinbet, this is What the EFL. And what a weekend it was in those playoffs. 211,858 supporters in attendance across the three finals. And that is a record. Extraordinary stuff. We're going to have a chat about all three games, plus a bit of managerial news in what is our final show of the season. So, of course, it's a full team turnout. Joining me, Matt, Adrian Clark. Hello.
Hello, you're right. Yeah, that's some turnout. That's brilliant. I thought the crowds were pretty awesome, to be honest. I mean, yeah, it costs a living and all that, but people have managed to find the money to go to these big events, and rightly so. They create so many good memories, all bad ones.
Probably handy that the League One tie was an all-London affair, but yeah, really impressive anyway. Sam Parkin was on hand for two of the three finals. How are you doing, Sam?
Yeah, really good. Loved it. I did think that yesterday, just think, what would the third tier, not the fourth tier, not to patronise any of our neighbouring countries, but what would, you know, some of their fourth tier games look like in comparison? It's just, it is incredible, the support of the teams in this country, and just, yeah, encapsulates why Football League, EFL is top, isn't it? And it's been a brilliant season.
Surely has, yeah. Before we get to the championship final then, let me remind you of the offer from our partners, Quinbet, where you can get 50% back up to £35 and 10 free spins. If your account has sportsbook losses at the end of your first day's betting, Quinbet will refund 50% of your losses as a free bet up to £35, minimum three bets, plus 10 free online casino spins at Quin Casino. Even if your account is up, you're guaranteed a £5 free bet plus 10 free spins, provided you place at least one bet of £10 or greater at the minimum odds. T's and C's apply. It's 18 plus and for new UK customers only. Visit gamblerware.org for information on responsible gambling. Okay, let's kick off then. So it is Sunderland who join Leeds and Burnley in being promoted to the Premier League after an incredible late turnaround against Sheffield United in the Championship playoff final on Saturday. 2-1 to the Black Cats. It finished, as you'll be aware, listener. Sam, you were there, but not for work. Tell us a bit about your experience.
Brilliant day. I absolutely loved it. I can't remember enjoying a football match as a fan so much in a long time. Took my 5-year-old, so I was a bit apprehensive about how he would get on with the noise and the size of the crowd, and it did affect him a little bit in TGI Fridays, I've got to say. It's a bit raucous in there. Long Island iced teas are plenty.
For him? Yeah, nice. Yeah. Get him one of the early doors. Like it.
He went for a hot dog without any sides. Just maverick. I liked it. No drink required. So that was good fun. But when we got in the stadium, any pre-match nerves dissipated. He was really good. Lost the whole game, ruined the Sunderland end. He's got a granny from Sunderland, so we just embraced it, really. And I thought it was a really good game. I thought it was a really good game, and I was trying to take it in as best as I could. Obviously, I had other duties, but I thought it was, really exciting. I thought Sheffield United thoroughly deserved to be in front. I thought that the VAR was obviously a massive moment. I think 2-0 there is probably too much of an uphill challenge for Sunderland, and probably would have been deserved given the way that Sheffield United had broken and had the best chances in the game. However, I thought Sunderland started the second half really well, posed a few more questions. I thought Bellingham had pushed up a bit higher. And then when he rolled the dice, Regis Labrie, they went very attacking with Lefay and Bellingham, kind of central midfield. Obviously, Watson was on, Isidore was on by then. And in contrast, Sheffield United lost their best player in Harmer. And I said to one of the gentlemen next to me, I said, you're going to get one here. You're going to get one. And I just felt that momentum swing inside the stadium. And I just thought Sheffield United looked tired. They looked ragged. They'd lost, again, the best player on the pitch for my money on the day. And I felt they were going to get their opportunity. I didn't imagine they were going to get two, but it was just, it was brilliant. What a climax. Fell for Sheffield United, but the euphoria in the Sunderland end, and I'm sure it's the same. And I remember being in a pylon when Bobby Zamora scored that goal for QPR all those years ago, courtesy of Richard Keogh's mistake. But just to see people of all generations sobbing, you know, right in the rows next to you was pretty special, and an amazing experience for my boy. Really enjoyed it.
But Sunderland dealt a blow less than 10 minutes gone. Luke 09 going off with what looked like a nasty shoulder injury. You fear for the dogs who inhabit Seaburn Beach over the next several weeks. No doubts about that. I mean, it was a perfect start, Clark, in a lot of ways for Sheffield United. They scored an excellent goal, didn't they? Lovely finish, great breakaway. Started from a Sunderland corner. Are you with Sam in that disallowed goal was the moment where the match changed? And what did you make of the decision?
I think Sheffield United were really unlucky to lose the game, I've got to say. I mean, they were very superior for the most part. Goalkeeper for Sunderland had an absolute blinder, didn't he? Anthony Patterson. That save from Kiefer Moore inside, what, the first minute or so, first couple of minutes, was unreal. Absolutely stellar save. It's a perfect header from Moore. Obviously, that's when 09 came off. But as we talked about in the pre-match, you know, with Meppham on the bench, I didn't feel it was going to weaken them too much, and so it kind of proved. The goal was one of the best counter-attacking goals I think I've ever seen. I never knew Gus Harmer was that quick.
I was better than that slow.
yeah. I mean, his little legs were going some, weren't they, Harmer? I mean, but then at the end of that run, to just slip one, I think it was through the legs of the defender to Campbell was great, and his touch and dink were perfect. It was a 10 out of 10 counter-attack, wasn't it?
Their first goal in a playoff final.
yeah, exactly. And look, at this point, especially when the second goal goes in that's disallowed, you know, Sheffield United are threatening to run riot. Sunday didn't turn up, did they? I thought, I was surprised at the starting 11. You know, he's played Lefebvre wide and, he didn't start in there. You know, it was sort of...
Clarky, let me ask you this.
Yeah.
They won the game. They're in the Premier League. Did he get his tactics wrong from the start? Because he basically said... Okay, we'll have the ball. And in the semi-final, he didn't want the ball.
Yeah. Well, they had the ball, didn't they, in the first half?
No, that's what I mean. He basically said...
That's wrong, isn't it? It was wrong because they were awful.
Maybe. Yeah,
they were awful. No, he saved it. He saved himself because the tactics were bad. And I think the starting 11 wasn't starting 11 I expected. I thought Isidore probably should have started with my ender behind. But anyway, that's how they finished, which I guess is all that matters. On the VAR, for me, it was the right decision because he hesitated in terms of, I think he would have dived a little bit earlier had that guy not been there. I forget who it was.
Vinny Souza.
Yeah, Vinny Souza, yeah. So I think it was the right call, perfectly honest. I mean, did you guys?
Yeah, I think so. It definitely made a difference, didn't it? Him being in the way. I guess there's a wider debate about VAR being used in the final and not elsewhere. But, you know, if you've got it, then I guess you might as well use it. Incredible stuff for Brighton-bound local lad Tommy Watson to get the winner after Mayenda's brilliant equaliser. I mean, really, Adrian, out of the three finals and certainly the last few in recent years, there's got to be three of the best goals we've seen in the playoff final, right?
Yeah. It was a really good game, and superb goals, but brilliant counter attack. The Mayenda goal, you know, really sharp play from him, peeled off his marker very well and lashed it in. He is a good player, Mayenda. He deserves to be in the Premier League. And the winner was just a peach, wasn't it? Obviously, it's such a shame for Kiefer Moore, who I thought, you know, was in with a shout for man of the match. You know, Sam might not have sort of, I don't know if he had a chance to watch any of it back. So it's hard when you're there. But I just thought Kiefer Moore's hold-up play was pretty brilliant. Like, as a big target man like Sam was, I don't think he did anything wrong until that moment, really. So I felt for him. But yeah, the goal was, he just passed it in, didn't he? It was such a calm goal. And I like the player. I've seen him earlier in the season, a couple of games I worked on watching Sunderland, and he looked good then. Reminds me a lot of Jack Clark. And the only shame for him, really, is that he's going to Brighton in a way, because, yeah, in a sense, I guess he could have stayed. I don't know whether they'll loan him back to Sunderland for the coming season or not. But yeah, amazing way to sign off if that's it for him.
All right, before we talk more Sheffield United then, Sam, just talk about the achievement for Sunderland. 14 points behind the Blades at the end of the season, 10th highest wage bill in the league, you know, predominantly extremely young squad, isn't it? Obviously, that's going to need a fair bit of refreshing, but I think as we're only a couple of days removed from the final, we ought to be letting them bask in the achievement rather than doom mongering about where they're going to finish.
Yeah, I hate that. I hate it. Yeah. Who knows is my retort to anyone who asks me that, because they're going to have to buy a whole new team in essence, or, you know, 11 new squad players as Ipswich and others have done, and some with more success than others. But the way they're approaching it is really interesting. Obviously, young lads from this country and also from abroad. So they're going to have their work cut out to get them ready for the Premier League. But love the manager. Just love everything about him, to be honest. The way he speaks is encapsulating.
Was he not dressed for a funeral though?
A little, like, yeah. He didn't look great in a suit, but I'm not going to hold that against him. I like the way he speaks. I think he's shown incredible understanding of the position, the league, the job, which is a massive one. And tactically, they've been great. They've been a really good watch. And probably the last three games encapsulates the flexibility of him as well. You know, he's not a one-trick pony. There's some nice tactical patterns. We see Hume coming in sometimes. They can play out, but they've also got dynamism in the front players to go a little bit longer on occasion. So, I was doing the radio gig for TalkSport earlier today, and he's my manager of the season. I think you think about all the achievements across the three divisions. I think Sunderland getting promoted this year would have been well down the things likely to happen. So, yeah, I think he's done an incredible job.
Yeah, and as we say, they'll refresh the squad as much as they can, I'm sure. Sheffield United, though, Clarkey, I mean, maybe we do all believe in the Wembley hoodoo now, 100 years since they've won there. They breezed their way through the semi-finals, didn't they? So we thought that they'd got over the disappointment of not being promoted automatically. Is this big enough where you start to think, well, maybe Chris Wilder isn't the man for the job? Or are you still thinking, oh, they'll be up there, they'll be the favourites to get promoted next season? Certainly amongst them.
No, they were easily the third best team in the Championship. They were the best team in the playoff final. Yeah, but by some distance, to be honest, up until those changes. You know, I do think from sort of 70 minutes onwards or 73, you know, it did change. And it had changed. The tide had turned a little bit before that as well. But no, there's not a lot wrong at Sheffield United, in my opinion. It's a hammer blow to them. Obviously, they spent a lot of money, brought in a lot of good players. So for them to not go up is a hammer blow. Obviously, some of the players might look to move on. That's the issue, isn't it? Harmer, obviously, is a standout in that regard. But no, I'd make them one of the favourites to come next season for sure. A little bit like Leeds. Leeds dusted themselves down after their sort of no-show, really. I mean, they played miles better than Leeds played against Southampton in last year's playoff final, and look what happened to Leeds. So, I'll give them a shot if Wilder stays. It's just about how they all deal with the setback, isn't it, mentally? How are they going to cope with it? If they can sort of dust themselves down and try to be positive, then I think they've got a chance. Yeah, I really do. But yeah, I felt sorry for them because, yeah, a little bit like Coventry in the semi-final. I think Sunderland definitely rode their luck, but we wish them well in the top flight. I think they're going to need it, unfortunately, but let's see how it goes.
Yeah, they've got the big derby to look forward to as well next season, haven't they? And Sheffield United, I'm sure, will go again. All right, we'll turn our attention to the League One final next. And there was just one goal in it. Couldn't possibly hope to live up to the Championship showpiece. Not that Charlton could give us stuff about that, of course. It was they who bested Leighton Orient thanks to Macaulay Gillespie's first half free kick to end the Addicts' 5-year exile from Tier 2. I can't make my mind up, Clarkey. Was it a great free kick, a terribly constructed wall, or poor from the goalkeeper? Bit of all three, possibly.
Definitely a bit of all three. Yeah, I mean, look, I wouldn't have saved it. It was a lot of spin on the ball, wasn't there? But if you're a pro keeper, if it's going in, it wasn't middle of the goal, but it wasn't right in the corner, was it? So, yeah, he'll be kicking himself because he's had a great season, hasn't he? The O's goalkeeper. So yeah, real blow. But it was a good effort, wasn't it, from Gillespie? And thank goodness we had at least one good effort on goal, because there wasn't a lot of quality, was there? I mean, Charlton played pretty poorly, I've got to say, especially once they took the lead. They really did sort of batten down the hatches, didn't they? Really try and score any more. Only 5 shots, 16 for Orient, but tellingly only one shot on target from the O's, which I think is a real sort of sense of frustration from Charlton, by the way. Just one shot inside the box in the whole match. So quite forgettable in terms of what they produced going forward. I thought Tyrese Campbell was pretty bright at times. He won the free kick, of course, but yeah, it was a game about defensive resilience, wasn't it? And Charlton have had so much of it. 23 clean sheets now for them. Kept a clean sheet in each of their last 3 games as well. So that in the moments that mattered, in the big games, they were just, you know, solid, weren't they? Super solid. And from 1-0 up, you know, they've got a ridiculous record, haven't they? They've, you know, drawn one game from 1-0 up in the entire season, you know, won every single other game. So, yeah, you don't want to fall one down to Charlton.
And the leap, Sam, from League One to the Championship is nowhere near as massive as it is from the Championship to the Premier League, right? I mean, Portsmouth, Derby, Oxford all stayed up this time around. So presumably there's no reason to think that Charlton will be in for, you know, a nailed-on relegation, albeit they might not be looking at a top-half finish, but they've got a manager who knows the league and a pretty experienced squad too, and certainly a more stable ownership than they've had in a while. So the recipe is there for them to establish themselves at the second-tier level.
Yeah, I'd be a hell of a lot more worried if it was a rookie who'd maybe come in and just produce something to take them into the second tier. Nathan Jones should give everyone comfort, I think, that they could consolidate, or maybe even better. You get that surprise element. I think it happens so frequently that first year up that you can keep going with the momentum. The game we all expected, absolutely. Probably the back three, the standout players. I thought Jones again, colossal. Gillespie, yet another massive goal. And even Ramsey, despite cramp for about 20 minutes, half an hour, was was super on the right-hand side. So, yeah, and Clarkey summed it up. One attempt that he mentioned came in the 99th minute for Dan Happy, the substitute, the one that needed saving. Made a few good takes, didn't he, Mannion, in goal? But other than that flurry of kind of speculative efforts, the one that clipped the top of the bar, that was it from Maureen. And yeah, I was listening on the radio by this stage, but the delay obviously killed the momentum. So rightly, I think Richie, Paul Terry, Alan McCormack were really displeased about that, because they had Charlton a little bit on the ropes at that point. But when it restarted, we're able to see the game through. And I can't remember exactly the words. I haven't got the transcript in front of me, but Nathan Jones after the game in the dressing room, look, you've probably hated it. You know, the attention to detail, how boring the training's been, all the structure, all the clean sheets. You know, it's not what we get into football for. But ultimately, and as we'll come on to in a few minutes with Wimbledon, it's got Charlton promoted. It's got Charlton promoted. And just thinking back to last week as well, I spoke about the maybe lack of a 10 or lack of a quality 10. And maybe that had a bit of an effect here as well. Gilbert played there, didn't have a great effect. And actually Anderson, who's a bit more of a destroyer, came on and did really well. So they'll want to add in that department, jumping ahead and definitely probably a different profile of striker to help out Matty Godden in the second tier as well.
Yeah, just another stat to add to the sort of ones that, in terms of their defensive excellence. And by the way, went from 1-0 up, it was 24 wins, 1 draw, no defeats. Just remarkable from 1-0 up. But yeah, they kept 34 clean sheets by half time in 49 games. So 34 of 49 first halves, Charlton didn't let in a goal. And that's just screams organisation, doesn't it? And discipline. And like you say, that's what those boring training sessions are about. It's about making sure you don't gift anything to the opposition. And yeah, that hard work definitely paid off. But Sam's right. I mean, they will need to invest quite a lot in attacking talent, in my opinion, because I just don't see them scoring with this group of players. They won't score anywhere near enough goals to survive, but I'm sure they will add to it. And we know that they're solid.
I think me and Clarkey sat in the Valley in September and said, "Cool, they miss a link player, they miss some guile in the midfield and behind the front player."
That's still my sentiment now. Yet they've been promoted. So different ways to skin a cat. I don't know how I'm going to surmise this, but it's like the playoff finals of the, the centre half almost. The resolute defence, forget the false nine, the inverted fullback. It's about having a long throw in your armoury and being able to defend your box.
And look, you look at the Championship, there's, unlike in the Premier League, where you're thinking, right, where's the car crash club that's going to get drawn in for those promoted clubs, Leeds, Burnley, etc., Sunderland? It's harder to pick it out. But in the Championship, I mean, the ones that survived, Hull, Preston, Derby, Stoke, Oxford, Portsmouth, QPR, Watford, Sheffield Wednesday might lose their manager, we'll see. But, you know, these are all clubs, I think, that could get drawn in towards the bottom next season. So I do think that that certainly Birmingham, Wrexham shouldn't be anywhere near the relegation, but they'll be near the top, Birmingham for sure. Charlton is different. They'll be in the battle, but they've got a chance, definitely.
Now, before we move on from this game, this quote leapt out to me, Adrian, because I think you've said this before. Ethan Galbraith of Leyton Orient said, the pitch feels bigger. It felt massive. You said that about Wembley as well once, right? It's a psychological thing as much as it is a literal thing, right? Isn't it? It's being on that pitch and looking up and seeing the stands that seem to go up to the sky. And maybe it was a case that Charlton dealt with that as well as, you know, the actual proportions of the pitch.
Yeah, it can't be the proportions. I think the proportions of most pitches these days are the same. When I played there years ago, like, I think it's just like it can sap you a little bit because it's just the emotion, the sort of the nerves, the sort of sense of occasion. I don't know what it is. It can affect players in different ways. And yeah, you sort of need your second wind. And I think that's what a lot of players find there. For me, Leyton Orient, well, Sunderland froze a little bit in that first half for me. And I would say that Walsall a little bit did. And Orient, I definitely think that the quality that they've got, they've got some really good footballers. They didn't bring their A game, did they? The build-up play was fine. But it was when they got to those moments that mattered, the final ball, the final choice was off. And I think a lot of that is probably down to big match nerves.
Yeah, I think fullback's probably the most impressive players for Orient, which sums it up really. Galbraith, I think, had the most touches. Curry's had a really good end to the season when he's been back fit, and the big concern for them is obviously you're going to lose a lot of these guys, Kelman, Curry, Donnelly and Keeley, the two lads from Tottenham. And listen, I'm sure he'll have the fight to go again because they've had a really good season and it's a great achievement, I think, given where they were late in Orient. But I'm sure Richie Wellens's name will be linked with jobs again because there's going to be all manner of jobs available, I'd imagine, in the Championship and League One still before the start of next season. So yeah, they'd have to keep hold of him. He'll have to have the fight for it and they'll have to get their recruitment spot on, which probably means across the board, I think the centre-halves, in comparison to Charlton's, weren't of the level. Those two are top, I think, the ones at Charlton that I've spoken of. And also, no Kelman, going to need some goal power as well. So, big summer for the O's if they're going to maintain their momentum.
Well, they'll look to go again. Congratulations to Charlton. In League Two, Walsall will remain. Not Wimbledon, though. The Dons done won the final, thanks to the sensationally named Miles Hippolyte's first half wonder strike. Sam, you were on commentary duty for this. Tough one for you with your two mates in the respective dugouts. Let's start with the winners, though. I kind of summed up how Wimbledon turned their season round, right? They were struggling for form, struggling for results. So, as has been the theme of the pod, they went back to being resolute and won their final four games, including this one by a goal to nil.
Yeah, four straight 1-0s, 1-0 to the Arsenal. Johnny Jackson, being an Arsenal fan, be enjoying this, as were a few of his mates that I bumped into in the aftermath yesterday, Gooners. I mean, I spoke to him in the week and obviously I asked him, not knowing what had been behind the recent upturn, and he said, and I saw it because I was at the training ground, he just tailored back the tactical sessions and the 11v11s, and they were just having fun, basically. Obviously, there would have been a bit of planning for Notts County, I think, in terms of the press because of how good they are with the ball. That took a little bit of time. Walsall probably less so because of the way that they play. You don't have to probably be too detailed in terms of your setup without the ball because you knew they were going to probably try and turn them. So I saw just a really vibrant training session, a lot of shooting practice, and that has clearly had a positive effect, just alleviating the pressure that I built on the players towards the tail end of the season. And yeah, we'll come on to Walsall, but you know, in reality, Wimbledon were on their knees a little bit. I think they finished with 2 wins in 9 maybe before the playoffs. So the recovery to produce the level of performance is staggering, like it was for Walsall. And in essence, they carried out their game plan better and probably had a little bit more, despite the goals for column this season, probably had a little bit more creativity, a little bit more likelihood of getting goals in that final, and probably just those players that could get on the ball. Jake Reeves absolutely was evident to me from the minute one. He's the one that's going to want to play. Wimbledon are going to have more of the ball. And through Hippolyte and the two wide boys, I think I said it on last week's pod, they're bigger goal threats than what Walsall have got. And that's how it played out. Hippolyte with a brilliant finish. And in truth, Walsall, despite having what, a 3 or 4 minute spell after the two changes at Adoma and Amanchi, they didn't really turn up and they didn't have enough ways to hurt Wimbledon. Didn't have that player to get into the pocket to link it. Just went too direct for Hall and Jellis. And it was mopped up by our favourite Joe Lewis and Harbottle. And I thought, most impressive of the lot, I thought Ryan Johnson was probably the standout defender yesterday. So yeah, Wimbledon got it done in the fashion we thought they would if they were to be victorious. And Walsall, yeah, probably in keeping with what we said about Sunderland first half and maybe Leighton Orient across the 90, didn't show their best on the big day.
Shout out to Riley Harbottle for that goal line clearance. That was pretty spectacular in the second half. Wimbledon's board deserves some praise, don't they, Clarkie? Third season for Johnny Jackson, 21st and then 10th and then a wobble this term. They stuck by their man and they got their reward for it.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, no, he spoke about that after, didn't he, about how they, you know, appreciated them sticking with him. But look, it's been an upward curve and... Yeah, he's clearly a really good manager. I know we're a bit biased here because we sort of like him and know him a little bit. But yeah, he knows what he's doing, knows how to organise a team. And hearing that from Sam about taking the pressure off the players by not overloading them with too much tactical stuff in training, I think it's genius. You know, that's really clever because the temptation ahead of such a big day must be to just blow out everything that's on your mind as a manager and say, we need to do this, we need to do this, you need to not do this, you know, to just get everything out there. But sometimes you've just got to trust the players and think, well, the hard work's been done. They've got us here because they can manage games very well themselves, and it just needs a little bit of top up here and there from me to guide them over the line. And I think that's a skill in itself for a manager to show the restraint to do that rather than go banging on about this, that and the other from a tactical point of view. So yeah, I found that really interesting. But yeah, I agree. I think Johnson was really good at the back. Nerfil, obviously, is a real threat, isn't he? I think he's a decent player. Lewis, 10 clearances in the game, won all three of his tackles. He's been brilliant across the three matches. Expecting him to come clean this summer and shave off that Barnet and yeah, look a little bit, you know, not be in denial about the old patch that's coming on the top of his head. But he was absolutely superb, I thought, across the three games. So yeah, and I also would have picked out Jake Reeves. He was the sort of dominant player, wasn't he, when they had the ball. Well, the fact that Walsall had no shots by half time, I think they'd had 77 accurate passes. That told you how in control of the game Wimbledon were. And I just praised up Charlton for a crazy stat about clean sheets at half time. Well, Wimbledon have got even more, 38 clean sheets at half time from 49 matches. That's nuts. That's really, really impressive. So yeah, Jonesy and Jacko know how to organise a team.
Do you think, Adrian, that Matt Sadler will be able to go again next season? I mean, it's one thing for Walsall to do it, but he's going to have a long holiday at the very least, isn't he? A reminder, 10 points clear of the playoff back on the 22nd of February, then going 13 without a win. You saw them perform well in the semis, but I mean, this is such a blow, isn't it, from where they were?
I hope he can. I hope he can, because he's clearly a good manager. You don't get that. You don't get to the top of the league if you don't know what you're doing. But the Walsall fans are on him a little bit, aren't they? They're going to be really disappointed. Yeah, it depends. I mean, Daniel Farke came back from a massive disappointment last summer, and look at him now. But Daniel Farke had got a couple of promotions on his CV already. You know, Matt Sadler's sort of still waiting, isn't he, to sort of do that kind of thing, even though he's done well before as a manager. So yeah, I sense they might change it, actually. But I kind of hope he stays. I don't know what Sam thinks.
Yeah, I think probably what goes against him is that he did change the feel and the look of the team latterly, and it obviously bared results, didn't it? Bringing in Chang and Hall and the Simway, and I don't think they were readily available at times this season. He would probably say mitigating circumstances, didn't have them all fit. But the reality is they would have been nowhere near the reckoning start of the season. They hugely surprised everyone, and they're the best player in the division. And I think, you know, that transformed them from a good League Two outfit to an outstanding League Two outfit. And I think they regressed to probably what they were in the tail end of the season, which was a good side, but not a side probably ultimately good enough for promotion. So having lost Lowe, and you can look at the ownership and you can look at the recruitment in January and say, did they adequately go and try and replace those goals that were departing? I think you have to factor all that in. So
definitely.
Listen, he's a clever guy, Matt, and he's a brilliant guy, and he will be under no illusions that he's going to come under enormous criticism, because there's 2 months now for the supporters to look at the data, look at the stats, and for journalists to pull out, this has never happened previously, blah, 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 blah. But the facts are, he got them into a brilliant position. Incredibly likeable boy. I hope he's able to reset and go again. It'll be a different looking side. They've obviously had low knees and what have you. But there's a hangover to come, because I certainly experienced it losing in the playoffs. And he will put on a strong front, because that's his way. But the players will be affected by this. Of course it will.
All right. Well, there's one manager. We'll wait and see whether he's on the move or not. We're going to talk about a couple who very well are next. Blimey, this took me by surprise. Norwich close to appointing Liam Manning. I didn't see this one coming, Adrian. I've got to say, what a blow for Bristol City. I mean, we're talking as if it's been done. Certainly that feels like it as we record on Tuesday afternoon. What do you make of this one?
Yeah, look, I went on the radio last week when this story first sort of broke, and I said, is it really an upgrade? You know, because, and I took a little bit of stick for that. And I think maybe rightly so, because I think Norwich probably do have quite a bit of a higher ceiling. It's just that when you look at the two teams at the moment, you know, Bristol City have a slightly better team than Norwich, but you got to factor in, I guess, I think he's from that area. You know, his family lived there. So that's a massive factor. And Norwich do have new owners who are pretty ambitious. So I do expect them to have a bigger budget than Bristol City this summer. And yeah, it's a club that's been in the Premier League. You know, that's where they want to be. So I kind of can see it happening now. I can. And do you know what? It wouldn't be a reflection on Manning. He wouldn't be walking out and doing the dirty on Bristol City. It will be what the owner of Bristol City kind of deserves. Because, you know, we said it in January. He's got a great coach there. Back him. And they signed no one. And he still got them into the playoffs. And in the playoffs, obviously they were short. But if they'd shown a bit more ambition in him, he'd be more inclined to stay, wouldn't he? He's probably now thinking, well, they didn't back me before. Are they actually going to give me enough money this summer to get over the line? Probably not. In which case, you know, there's a club here that really want me, and they're saying they're going to give me X amount of cash to spend. So for me, actually, the more I think about it, the more it makes sense. And I think for Norwich, it'd be a really good choice.
It's interesting, isn't it, Sam, to see a manager kind of be so proactive, you know, the way that he left Oxford for Bristol City, and now he's going to do the same again. We often talk about managers and timing being everything for them, but there aren't many who jump long before their push, but maybe like Adrian's saying, sort of see the iceberg coming of, well, I've hit my limit at Bristol City, of course I'm not going to get any money, so this is a logical step for me to make, and who cares about what people say about my reputation of jumping ship.
I think we said it a fortnight ago that, you know, Steve Lansdowne's comments were basically, you know, we're not going to roll the dice now because we're in a tempting position to kick on and potentially go one step further next season, which, you know, is not going to be music to the ears of the guy who's going to be counting the pennies and spending the dosh to try and improve his squad. So we don't know what he's feeling. We don't know what his family's feeling. I think location and ambition of the club are the two things at play here. From the outside, I'm surprised he's on the move again.
just because, you know, it was a good, it seemed like a good fit. All the supporters seem on board and I enjoy watching his team. But I think he's going to go to a squad that's got better resources, a club that's probably got better resources right now to have a push next season for the Premier League, despite Bristol City being in the playoffs. So we will see. Great job for someone to go in at Ashton Gate, despite the possible limitations in terms of transfer, Kitty. Brilliant job for someone.
Feels rare for a manager to swap one type of bird for another. I'd love to see a robin and a canary have a fight. I think that would be a really even contest, but we'll never know, unfortunately. Meanwhile, Championship-bound Southampton have confirmed the appointment of Will Still as their new manager. Only 32 years old, succeeds Ivan Juric. He doesn't have the stank of the second worst ever Premier League season on him. He said, there's huge potential here. We have a great opportunity to do something special. It's a tricky gig though, isn't it, Sam? I mean, I know he's got the parachute payment money, etc., but this is his first job in English football. He's going to need to hit the ground running, and he might need a whole lot of new players to do that.
Yeah, I've not had an opportunity to think or look what the squad's going to look like, but you'd imagine, again, resources are going to be very good for the level. I suppose what jumps out to me straight away, I know he comes with really good reputation, I suppose it's the style, and it sounds like it's a bit kind of Hasenhüttl, maybe. I don't know why I want to say heavy metal football, but I kind of want to say that. Sounds like it's aggressive, loads of players forward, high pressing, intensity, probably Jurgen Kloppy rather than Pep Guardiola. That's what I'm led to believe is the kind of mantra. So we'll see. They've gone from one thing to the other across the last couple of seasons, haven't they? Especially this year with the meticulous preparation and intricate passing of Russell Martin to the kind of, long ball and what was it, man marking all over the pitch kind of style of Juric latterly. So, yeah, it's going to be a whole new style for the players to get to grips with in pre-season, but I'm sure he'll have the resources to bring in good players. They'll have a good squad. We'll see. It feels like there's a pun there. We'll see how good he really is.
Will still be there. Yeah, there's loads of potential here, I think. It's interesting, Clarky, I think, to look at the fact that we see so many managers come in from the continent around his kind of age, you know, in their 30s. You think of Fabian Hertzler, there's loads more examples as well. And my initial thought was, it's good to see an English, young English coach being given this kind of opportunity. But then, of course, his grounding is all in European football. It's not in English football. It feels like that's the way you get in.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Look, he'll have great knowledge of the French market, won't he? He's worked in Belgium as well. So, you know, those two countries develop a lot of talented young players, don't they? So he'll have a good idea on who are the players that are good enough to shine in the Championship. Yeah. So, no, I think it's a really good appointment for them and for him, really, because they really should be in the promotion mix, shouldn't they, Southampton? So, first job in English football. He's going to be winning more games than he loses, surely. I think his style is a bit more balanced than what Sam was saying. He does do that. But I think he's also got a reputation for, he can low block it if he has to. He likes a back three. I think he likes 3-1-4-2 is kind of the thing. But he doesn't always stick to it. He'll sometimes go with a back four. So he's one of those little bit of a horses for courses guy rather than someone that's got this Russell Martin philosophy, you know. So, but yeah, I don't think it's all about possession with him for sure. Sam's right on that. So, yeah, I think good fit for both parties. And he seems like a good lad, doesn't he? He seems quite an amiable chap. So, yeah, hopefully we can get him on the show. Let's try and get him.
Yeah. We'll still be trying to get managed. No, I'm just going to leave it. I've got a whole summer to work.
If he comes on, though, come on, you can only hit him with two or three.
Yeah. One at the start, one at the end. Yeah. I've already got it planned. Don't worry. Elsewhere, Newport County have named Manchester United youth coach David Hughes as their new manager. He signed a 2-year deal with the League Two side, having left his role as the under 21s coach and assistant manager at Old Trafford. So, Newport, you might be getting some young Man United players on loan next season. By the sounds of it.
Yeah, they'll all want to be going to Newport, won't they?
Get me to Rodney Parade. Yeah, I've always wanted to be an exile, they'll say. Let's wrap things up with our predictions. This is the final round of the season. Clarky's got the overall scores as well. In terms of the final, Adrian, you got the only perfect score, which was from the League Two final. So you got 4 points in total, just the one for me and none for Sam. I've been trying to procrastinate and not let you read out the final table, but I'm afraid we're there now.
Yeah, well, because we got treble points in the final, it's our one. if we're doing it the same points, which we are, of course, Matt, you came third. So well done on that. You came third.
On the
great
podium.
Effort.
Yeah.
You're on the podium, 54 points. I was bang average all season long, never threatened the big man with 60. And 10 points clear. I mean, he was been on the beach for the last few weeks, hasn't he, Sam? So
it's hard when you get that lead to maintain it when you're out in front, but some of us have that metal, I suppose. So delighted with it.
Good concentration levels, mate. Yeah. You know, you didn't allow yourself to get distracted.
Although the finals, if I can come clean, I didn't get anywhere near any. I don't even think I got many finalists. You know, like the semi-finals, there was just so many curveballs thrown in. I didn't get anywhere near it.
Well, congratulations to Sam, the reigning and defending champion of our Predictions League. We'll do a tweet of the week before we go as well, but let me remind you one more time of the offer from our partners at Quinbet, where you can get 50% back up to £35 and 10 free spins. If your account has sportsbook losses at the end of your first day's betting, Quinbet will refund 50% of your losses as a free bet up to £35, minimum three bets, plus 10 free online casino spins at Quin Casino. Even if your account's up, you're guaranteed a £5 free bet, plus 10 free spins, provided you place at least one bet of £10 or greater at the minimum odds. T's and C's apply. It's 18 plus and for new UK customers only. Visit gambleaware.org for information on responsible gambling. Right, I was struggling for a tweet of the week, I'll be honest. Obviously, not as prolific from football clubs and their players at this time of year. And then I saw this from AFC Wimbledon at 7:40 p.m. on Monday. So a good couple of hours after the final had finished. Admin, perhaps on the source, all in caps, inbox park, where you hun, hashtag AFCW, yellow circle emoji, blue circle emoji. I think this is just lovely stuff, Sam, isn't it? This is what we want admin to be getting involved in.
I thought you'd hacked my WhatsApp there, because I think I've received five of these messages from different friends, maybe replacing the hun with mate, but yeah, I've received a few of them. So yeah, and we missed a trick last year, by the way, after Southampton Leeds, by not going to the EFL party, because it's a decent little shindig to end the season. So rival parties going on across the Wembley vicinity last night. But no, I thoroughly enjoyed it. And yeah, maybe I'll end just on a sentimental note, just as I scroll down to the replies here, seeing a picture of Bezo, the Wimbledon goalkeeping coach, with my mate Johnny Jackson. Very proud of him this morning to now be a League One manager. And I'm sure he's nursing a sore head.
Yes, well earned too. Clarky, we've hammered admin at various clubs throughout the season. I think this is the best example of what admin can do with a bit of humour, right? They're not taking pot shots at other clubs. It's clearly a joke. Everybody's in on it, despite some of the replies. Good stuff.
Yeah, he is banter, isn't it? Look, I'm not a fan of the hun thing, where you hun. Like, it's never a term I'd ever use. Don't really get it, if I'm honest. But it's fun. They're obviously on the lash, deservedly so. But yes, what did they do? That, like, hire out Box Park, or like, what did they do? Have a section of it? Like, how's it work? I think they just pile in.
I think they have the whole thing for the supporters pre-match, and then obviously there's the food court down the bottom and bars where the punters go, and then there's a little elevated section for the VIPs.
Oh, the VIPs. So if you win, you can go into that bit, maybe.
Well, I think Wimbledon had Box Park, and I'm not sure what the Saddlers' plans were, but unfortunately, they didn't stick around, unfortunately.
You think they probably just rented out the biggest pound land in London or something, and just pass it there. Perhaps
there's probably a pound land in a Wembley vicinity, surely. Probably several.
I don't know. I mean, if you're going back to the Midlands, despite it being a 2-hour journey, it's still going to be the best journey of your life if you've won at Wembley. So I'd imagine they probably would have had something planned back up towards Walsall.
We'll never know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
they're always sombre affairs.
Win or lose, you have a party.
I spoke to Jamie Mack enough about it yesterday. In my experience of losing the big games, it was never on my agenda to get stuck in. You know, after a big defeat, I just wanted to go and be by myself and wallow, unfortunately. So that's the reality of the other side.
Well, also wallow, Wimbledon celebrate. 'Twas ever thus. Many thanks for being with us throughout this season. We really do appreciate it. It's been tremendous fun throughout the campaign, but that is where we are going to leave it for this term. Thanks to as well to Sam and Adrian for their expertise throughout the campaign. Hope you have a great summer. Speak to you soon. For now though, it's goodbye.